Welcome to episode 19 of the Phil Marriott and Catherine Ellis podcast. Myself, Phil Marriott, and of course, the diva herself, Catherine Ellis.
Hello, yes, hi.
And we are, as always, joined by the long-suffering PA of the diva, who is Stewie.
Not as always, though.
Well, no, actually, that's very true.
I'm here.
It's more like a special occasion these days.
I'm in the background playing the guitar.
Wake me up!
And, of course, we've got the long-suffering husband. Am I allowed to say that? Max Ellis?
Yes, I'm sure he is suffering.
Busy taking pictures, and he will be here to talk about the tormenting tune for Driving Miss Diva. We were talking about that on the last episode, the fact that you're slowly liking his tunes, his choice of tunes. Is that fair to say?
Phil, how many more times? Okay, let me say this again. let me break it down for you. I like rock.
Yeah.
I don't dislike Max's taste in music. There are, and I've said this before, but I'll say it again for your benefit, because you don't really listen. There are tunes of his that I actually don't like. Most of it, I actually do.
Right.
What I object to, particularly on long car journeys, is the repetition of style.
Because it's relentless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like a variety of different kinds of music, ranging from heavy metal to rock to blues to jazz to soul to funk to dance to classical. I actually like probably every genre of music.
You're not fussy.
I am fussy in terms of quality control.
Standards.
But if, you know, yeah, so that's it really.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying.
Yeah. Don't worry, you can ask me again and I'll tell you again.
I'll ask you on the next episode. Yeah. So Max Ellis will be here later to share his possibly not tormenting tune, then if the diva loves it, we'll find out later. That could be one for the listeners, though, because a lot of listeners have complained at the severity of those song choices.
Yes, well, you know, it's good for them, I'm sure.
As always on this episode as well, we've got the best music. If you're listening on iTunes, head over to Mixcloud, hop over to our page there at PMK Podcast on Mixcloud. You want to do the jingle, Catherine?
PMKE on Facebook, on Mixcloud, on Twitter, on Instagram.
Yeah, we still haven't pre-recorded the jingles yet.
On iTunes.
Need to get round to doing that. And of course, if you're listening on Mixcloud, we have a speech-only version on iTunes. You can subscribe.
Hello, I'm just going to talk.
Coming up, we've got Theo from Hertz. I caught up with him just a few days ago to chat about the new album, Surrender. Catherine Ellis, what have you surrendered to recently?
Chocolate, cake,
yeah,
wine.
I have to say, thank you very much from a couple of weeks ago for
throwing
my birthday
away.
Cake.
Oh, yes, pleasure.
Yeah,
Curly
lovely.
The caterpillar.
Yeah, that was very delicious. Because you know, sometimes on cakes, the icing is, because sometimes the icing I leave off because it's a bit sweet. But actually, it was really nice, that icing.
Yeah, it was more like melted chocolate.
Yeah, it was.
Rather than the sort of thick paste icing.
Yeah.
Which can some.
I couldn't get enough of it.
He shoveled it, Jen. He had the face end, but he did share the face around.
Theo from Hertz, good to see you again. I don't know if you remember, actually. I think I saw you about 2 years ago. I think it must have been the last album. Maybe three.
Maybe. It was for the last album, yeah, two or three years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, with Adam last time.
Yes.
But you're on your own today.
I'm on my own in my lovely zone.
Yeah, does that feel quite liberating?
Well, I mean, not particularly.
Well, I noticed on Twitter you've got separate profiles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got separate messages for the world. That's
right. There's no band profile, though.
We have, like, a shared identity.
Yeah.
But we have separate messages, you know.
I thought it was like the alarm bells were ringing. I was thinking maybe this is a signal of something to come, that you were going to go your own separate ways. But
no,
you're not,
no.
Obviously, because you have a new album out.
We have, yeah. And it's almost 10 years since we met, actually.
Yeah.
Well, it is this year. It's 10 years since we met and started making music. So
anniversary album, then?
Well, in a kind of way. It was like we weren't friends at the beginning. We started the band first, and then we sort of got to know each other. So, yeah, 10 years, long time.
Yeah. Interesting title as well, Surrender.
Yeah.
What did you surrender to, if you did surrender to anything?
Well, I think it's a bit like freedom, you know. There's a freedom that comes with that word. It's also quite a dramatic word. I think that's always a nice way to begin with an album title.
Yeah, dramatic is Hertz as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the sort of, that's the point, you know. I think that's what we love about art, music, or whatever, you know. It's,
yeah,
you've got to sort of push it a little bit. So There's no harm in being theatrical.
No, definitely not. And I think third albums, well, you know, history tells us that third albums can be quite difficult. Was it a difficult one or was it easier than the last one?
Do you know what? It's one of the most fun... Well, it's probably the most fun we've had making an album. Like, the first one is a sort of its own beast, you know. It takes you years and it's a very strange time. And the second one for us was particularly tough, not necessarily sort of to come up with an idea, but it was tough, just a process. It was quite a dark, tumultuous time for us both. And the music kind of reflected that. And we sort of set off on a path to make this sort of operatic, dark album. And once you've sort of signed yourself over to that, the only way is to sort of follow it through. And so by the end of it, we were like, right, we need to get out of that mood. So we decided to just go do a 180, you know, and try and make an album that was showed the lighter side of us and just inspire ourselves in a different way. And by doing that and by relinquishing a lot of the sort of barriers and boundaries we'd put on ourselves, we just had a great time and made music while we were having fun, which was
so lovely. You got some of the lightness back, because the last album, that was Exile, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was quite tough, quite dark, like you say. But I think that was the result of touring, because you were writing it when you were on tour and it was quite a hard slog, wasn't it?
We just came off the back of the sort of the whirlwind of a first album, which is nuts, and then went into that with a bit of a weird mindset, you know. And I think it's nice to treat albums as its own little thing, and Exile was its own thing, Happened as its own thing, and now Surrender is a big pop moment for us, which is it's quite liberating.
Yeah, we can hear that already, actually. It's I wouldn't say it's a departure, because it's obviously sounding very hurt still, but I think it does have a bit more light than the last album.
Yeah,
definitely.
it just takes off a trail that we've sort of planted for ourselves before, you know. There's songs like Wonderful Life, Sunday, Better Than Love, all of these songs off the first album that have a similar mood. We've just sort of gone down that path, you know. So.
Did you have the fear that you might have alienated your fans from the last album? Because it was... I would imagine that a lot of your fans like that dark stuff anyway, because the first album's...
Yeah, well, to be honest, I think when we made the second one, it was the same situation. I think when we put out Wonderful Life, the first song we ever put out, and we put out Blood, Tears and Gold after that, this process started of people second-guessing the band that we were, and they're like, doesn't sound like this, doesn't sound like that. And then, so Exile, I think, was by making that brave move to go in a really sort of extreme direction with it, with what we wanted to achieve, and to come out the other side and have been supported, and we've done the bigger tours than we've ever done before. It's kind of, all it's done is really given us confidence that we can just, if we just be ourselves and do what we feel like, then hopefully people just sort of get it, you know. And the key for us is being truthful, you know. And I think as long as the emotion's real, then it comes across as a powerful thing. And I think if we'd have made this album and tried to replicate a moody sort of darker atmosphere, it would have just come across as false for a weird purpose. So we just got to be, it's got to be yourself, you know.
Yeah, and the new album Surrender, you worked with Stuart Price as well. Of course, has worked with some amazing bands and artists, The Killers and Madonna.
Yes.
Did he talk to you much about Madonna, or was it strictly just Hurts you were talking just about your album? And did you like,
well,
go to the pub,
like,
or anything? Or
he actually, there was a good Madonna moment when we made this album where he used to be in Madonna's band as well after he made that album. And in his sort of archive in his studio, he has a lot of individual song parts from her back catalogue. And one of the most amazing things he played me was the choir from Like a Prayer.
Wow.
Soloed by itself with no music. And we had it on full blast in the studio, and it was the original take of the choir that he has with no music. And it was so brilliant.
That's quite an honour
so
as well.
Brilliant.
Because I'd imagine
hear,
not many people have heard that as well.
No, and he was like, do you want to hear what the sort of bass sounded like in Vogue or whatever? And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting.
Have you ever considered acting? I suppose being in promo videos is kind of acting as well. I mean, we'll move on to a video that you've appeared in recently in just a moment. But Lady Gaga, of course, has appeared in American Horror Story. Even today, I heard the news that Pete Murphy from Bauhaus is about to appear in a horror movie.
Oh, wow.
Is that something that you'd be keen on doing?
Yeah, I'd be interested in it. I like making videos, and and I love film and stuff like that, you know. So it's definitely something I would be interested in. It's just getting the time, you know. Yeah. Making music videos is enough, takes enough time for me.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Is that quite a tough thing? Is that something you enjoy? Because when you see the finished result, it's kind of, you know, 3 or 4 minutes of amazing visuals, but it can take ages, can't it? I can presume it takes days to...
It takes a while. I love it. I love every single second of it because it's so important for our band, the visual element. From the beginning of the band, it was absolutely crucial. So we just take a lot of care out of it, over it, and we think about the visuals a lot when we make music. And, yeah, they take a while, but I think we like the idea of sort of the pop magic that comes with a music video.
Now, you mentioned Exile, the last album. I saw you actually launching that album at Heaven.
Yeah.
One of the most famous gay clubs, I suppose, around the world.
Yeah.
Have you played many gay clubs? Not just PAs, but have you done, like, Pride festivals and stuff?
We have done... No, when we were in a previous band, we did some in Manchester.
Because I was going to say, because you're from Manchester.
We did Nightclub Poptastic in Manchester, which
How was
brilliant.
That
was fantastic, yeah. And then... But not really much. Not much since, really. Like, not specifically, sort of gay events. But it's not. It's not for want of, not for not wanting to.
Yeah, but not something that you've been approached to do or
no. I think
regularly.
I think we got asked to do Pride in Manchester once. I'm not even. It came up, but then I think someone like Kylie took our place.
Right,
well, which
that's
is
a good
fine.
One to
you
do.
Know, she can take our place.
It's one of the best ones to do, Manchester.
Yeah, I know. I used to live. Actually, on the next street down from Canal Street, my flat used to look onto Canal Street.
Right.
And it was just non-stop it was 7 days a week. It was non-stop out my window.
Did you get out of town that weekend then?
No, it was just
the commotion. Yeah.
I watched it all out my window. It was fantastic.
Now, I've got a couple of questions from listeners. Dolly in London is asking you why you haven't hunted down the deaf fools that put together the Brits nominations. That's criminal, surely.
It is, but then... Sometimes you look at who wins and you think...
wouldn't want to be in there anyway.
Wouldn't want to be second best. I'd rather not even be in the race than be second best. But I don't know. It's like... I go to the Brits, though, sometimes, because it's fun. I nearly got thrown out last year.
What, for
my
kicking up a stink that you weren't nominated?
The table I was on nearly got thrown out because we're being too rowdy, right? So this is my...
That's what the Brits need, though, now, because it used to be rowdy. It's not anymore,
when you're there,
it?
Okay, it's like a dinner, and... It's music. Music's fun.
Yeah.
And music's ridiculous, essentially. Like, that's what it is it's a laugh. So we were on this table, and then, like, there was a table next to us with, like, politicians on it. I was like, what are they doing here? Get out. They shouldn't even be there. It was all these fat politicians drinking champagne.
Well,
like,
it's Prescott and Chumba Wamba, that's fine.
Yeah, but it's just like,
see it
that's all right.
Kicking off, yeah.
So they're sat there, everyone's silent. And at our table, all we were doing is making a bit of noise. And sort of shouting at Ant and Dec a little bit. This guy came over and went, if you don't calm down. But it just needs, it's fun, you know. I just think it's fun.
That's what nailed it, though, because you're picking on Ant and Dec, shouting at them.
We weren't really picking on them, we were just shouting. It was just heckling. You know, it's like, that's the whole point, is that it's funny. But I like it, it's fun, you know. I love the idea of the Brit Awards, and I love the idea of the tradition of it. I just find it hilarious because it's just funny. And
you're not annoyed then that you haven't been nominated?
I'm not annoyed, you know. No. An award's an award. It's great to win an award, but you don't make music to win awards.
There's always next year because the album's just coming out now.
We could be in the running.
I don't know if that actually... Because it's weird, isn't it, how they time things with albums. It has to be in that bracket of
it
that
is.
Timeline.
We often win... We've won awards in Germany before and other places. We've been to award shows Adam tried to bring an award. We got won this award called a Bambi Award in Germany, which is like the big sort of like Oscar or whatever. It's like the award is a Bambi. It's like a deer, big golden deer. And Adam brought it back through as hand luggage on the plane, and they had to scan it in the airport.
Getting
and obviously
again.
All the German people at the airport know what that is. So everyone was like crowding around to watch this like golden Dio go through the x-ray machine and was like, ooh. We were just like carrying it on the plane.
Amazing.
Like an ornament.
Now we've got to talk about the video, Bryan Adams' video, which I saw for the first time this morning, and I don't think you could have had a better, well, person to work with. Not just Bryan Adams, but Helena Bonham Carter, who has really thrown you about a bit.
She's beating me up the whole
time. She's beating you up.
That's essentially what I got myself into.
But the thing I loved about it was her quoting... in an interview that she enjoyed it. It was the best experience ever. It was like cathartic for her to
beat
you
up. Well, I'm glad
up.
That she... no, do you know what? It was lovely. Like, Brian, I did a shoot with Brian, because he's an amazing photographer, for Zoo magazine, a fashion magazine. Then since then, he just asked me, he called me one day, he said, I'm making this video, do you want to be in it? And then I was like, yeah. And then afterwards, he's like, oh, Helena Bonham Carter's going to be in it as well. I was like, okay.
I sealed it.
But I was like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to be doing. Yeah. And I turned up and I was like, right, what am I even, what's supposed to happen here? And then, so then she came, she was lovely, sort of so humble, so just so sweet, you know. And I was sort of, I mean, she's a legend and she's the coolest woman on the planet.
Yeah.
And Brian was just like, make it like Streetcar. And I was like, okay, does that mean you've got to hit me loads? And she went, I'll hit you if you want. And then there was a bit where I said, look, you can push me over. She was like, half pushing me. I was like, look, if you're going to push me, I said, just sort of push me. I said, because you won't be able to push me over. She was like, of course I'll be able to push you over. I went, you can push me, you won't be able to. It's all right. And then before he said action, she pushed me and I fell right over a load of boxes and she was point laughing going, I told you I had to push you over.
You're so encouraging it, so that's fine.
I came out with bruises and a red face from where she slapped me, but it was one of the best days of my life.
I think you asked for it though, didn't you?
I did, I asked for it.
Like anger therapy for her, really, isn't it?
Oh, apparently, that's what she
like
said.
Like a punch bag.
It was in between the takes. She was having a lovely time.
Yeah.
Everyone was having a lovely time. And then as soon as she's an actress, I guess. That's the whole point. But as soon as it switched on, it was... She was a terrifying figure to be slapped by.
Do you and Adam, as a band, do you interact with fans on Facebook and Twitter? I mean, I know
sometimes,
you've got Twitter
yeah.
accounts, but do you do it from a work perspective? Or
sometimes. It's a great way for us and the fans to sort of communicate because they're spread out on all over the world and often sort of far away countries that we don't get a chance to go to and stuff like that. So it's really good for them to have a sense of community and us to be able to stay in touch with them all. We communicate with them in bits and bobs, you know, but it's tough because there's a lot of them, you know, and you've got to be careful not to sort of just switch it on and off because people will go, why isn't he talking to me?
So a lot of Fruit Loops out there as well,
presumably.
Well,
I just like, they're lovely, you know, they're lovely and they're very devoted. And I think that is, without them, we wouldn't have got this far. So it's like, I mean, it's a cliche to say, but it's, in our case, it's very, very true because it's, it's the fact that they allow us to go to these places all around the way around the world is brilliant. So, and they draw fantastic pictures of us, pictures that equally make me laugh and make me gobsmacked how brilliant they are. So I'm very thankful for the artwork.
And I guess it's stuff that takes time as well. That's the most important thing, isn't it? When you're looking at stuff that people have gone into effort with.
It's mind-blowing for me that that the music has an effect on people in that way, you know. And that's why I just sat and signed 3,000 CDs and 1,000 vinyls.
Crab claw.
And my little crab claw. My hand turned into a little chicken foot by the end of it. But I'll sit there and do that because it's 4 hours out of my day. But that's important for me it's an important thing for karma, you know. People are spending this time and people have bought the CDs. So you've got to sit and give that time back, you know.
What can you tell us that you spoke about it earlier, the new album, but what can you tell us about it that you haven't told anyone else? Maybe the methods of making it, were they different? Obviously with Stuart Price as one of the producers.
It was, having him on board was really crucial, actually. It was the first album we made with three producers, and it was him, Ariel, and Jonas Quant, who's done our previous two albums. But what Stuart brought to it was a great pop sensibility, and obviously he's like one of the kings of electronic music, you know. So he's got a great grasp on the dancier songs that we did on this album, which was kind of new territory for us, really. And so he was really influential for that. And he's also the nicest man.
Is he?
Probably in the like top three nicest people on the planet. I've not met the other two, so for me he's number one.
Yeah.
But the whole experience of working in his house in LA was just magical, you know. What a guy. Just thinking of him gets me a bit teary.
Yeah, and he gets the dark stuff as well, because he understands that, you know, the edgy pop, doesn't he?
He knows how to get the best out of a band, you know. I think that's his talent and his great skill, is that whether it's Madonna, Killers, Take That, or his own stuff, or Scissor Sisters, who he worked with, it's like he gets the best out of what he's presented with. And for us, that was very crucial.
I think you can really hear him in his sound as well. You can tell that he's produced something or worked with somebody on something. What's the thing that you could have done without since you started? And we're, like you say, you've been together as friends for 10 years, you and Adam. But
what could we have done without?
As a band, what could you have done without? And also, on the flip side, what couldn't you have done without since you started?
What could I have done without? It's a weird question. I don't know.
Is there a downside to you being in Hertz?
Not in any way, you know, and I don't, it's brilliant, and it's absolutely so much fun all the time, and it's, that's why I'm always very thankful and very grateful that we get the chance to do it, because for four or five of the years we've known each other, we were just in Manchester on the Dole hoping that one person would come and see us play, and doing the gig after gig after gig with sort of a blind tenacity, and then one day they did, and that's why it's still very exciting for me, because it's kind of equal measures of success and not success. So at the moment it's still very fun, and also what's not to like? There's not really anything to complain about. The fact that you get to, some people say it's like get tired. Well, everyone's tired. Stop moaning.
Yeah.
People are tired that do all sorts of jobs. I don't work in like a factory or like down a mine. Or
yeah,
something.
True.
And it's like, it's fine. People are more tired than you.
That's quite refreshing, because you do hear some people in bands or artists kind of moaning about, you know, the lifestyle, the regime of it. You've always got to do promo and you've always got to do.
I think those people, wherever they were in the world and whatever they did, they would be moaning. That's what it is. It's like Noel Gallagher said famously. He was like, when I step out my front door, I'm at work. And that's brilliant. And I don't care, because I can just go home and shut the door and I'm not at work anymore. And that's like, that's a good outlook, you know. Also, I think for me, it's when I was a kid growing up, I grew up in Yorkshire in the middle of nowhere. Like, there was nothing around at all. And I couldn't go and see gigs or anything. And my only outlet was musicians and music and looking at these people and thinking, what life do they live? Like, I'd love to do that one day. And you listen to them speak and they telling these stories and wearing clothes that you could never wear. I couldn't wear those clothes in Yorkshire and all this sort of stuff. And you get so excited. And then you might catch one of them complaining and you go, do you know what? Screw you, because why are you complaining about that? Because I want to do it. And I always stuck with me when I heard people say complain about being in a band. I was like, step aside, because there's a million people that want to do it who aren't going to complain.
Yeah, totally. Listen, Theo, it's great to see you today. It's a nice way to finish the interview as well.
On very
a
positive poignant, note. Very positive.
Yeah, very. Wish you all the best with the single as well, which is Lights.
Yes.
It's kind of got that 80s soul vibe about it as well, which is quite refreshing as well.
Michael McDonald.
Yeah, definitely.
A bit of Hall & Oates in there.
You can tell you've been in Hollywood.
There is. A bit of sunshine in it.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, definitely. And all the best with the album as well, which comes out, I think it's the 9th of October?
It does, yeah.
Yeah, all the best and good to see you.
Thank you.
So that's the new single from David Morales featuring Janice Robinson. It is called There Must Be Love.
There must be love. Love, love. Doo-doo.
We've got Jay McDonald back in the room.
That was David Morales.
I wonder what you were laughing at. You're laughing at my posh accent. My David Morales. See, that's a direct result from coming from Kent, growing up in Cornwall, and being ridiculed for my Kentish accent as a kid. I'm still scarred by that.
Did you say Kentish?
No, that's why I try and pronounce my words, but and probably the radio training as well. Maybe, he says, trying to be professional.
It's Jeremy.
It's Jeremy.
Jezza.
Yeah.
Come on, Phil. If you're going to be moving in, you've got to enunciate.
Yeah, check a previous podcast for the backstory on that. So,
shout out!
God, I just recoiled then, thinking that the volume would go away just by moving backwards.
Shall I start, or do you just want to talk about it?
Please do.
Okay, I'd like to shout out my sister, Alexandra Newton. Very kindly took a day off work, and we drove down to see Jerry, my mum's boyfriend, in hospital, who's comfortable. Very nice to see him. He was cracking jokes as ever.
Always
amazing
good to crack
man.
A joke.
Yeah. And love you, sissy. Have you got one?
I have, yeah. Charlie Hyde.
Shut up!
You know Charlie Hyde because you know him as a friend, but you've been on stage with him at the RVT, the Royal Vauxhall Tavern, which is
also
now listed.
Also both been artists on the Atlantic Atlantis Cruises, which is where I met him.
Yeah, he's lovely. And he recently was on Celebrity Big Brother on the bit on the side. I know you didn't watch it. Did you watch it, Stewie?
Yeah.
No. Well, he was on there. He was on there as a guest. He was part of the panel, which is great to see. I just wanted to say hello to him because we share the venue at the RVT because I DJ the last set on, what's it called, Sunday Social. And he's there earlier performing around 2 or 3 in the afternoon, and I DJ at the last part of the evening. So hello to Charlie Hides, because I never get to see him on the day because I'm always turning up later.
Hello, Charlie.
Yeah. He does a mean Cher and Madonna impression.
He does. What is it? CharlieHidesTV.com.
Yeah.
I'd like to shout at Sue Lindenberg, who is a lovely lady that lives locally that Max met in the park, because she's an early riser out at dawn on her bike taking pictures. She's become a friend. And when my mother moved into a nursing home locally, she offered to come and visit her with me.
Oh.
And she's been a couple of times with me, and now she's popped in a couple of times on her own, which is just such a kind thing to do. Very helpful to me and very nice for my mother. So thank you very, very much indeed,
Sue.
That's
the sort of friend you need, isn't it?
So kind.
Yeah, thoughtful.
Shout out Emma Lynch.
Ah, oh, luscious Lynch.
I know it's all about my mum at the moment, but Emma Lynch. Shout out Emma Lynch. Thank you for the wheelchair. Much obliged. Very useful. Even though Zoe was really embarrassed when I was pushing you. Zoe's your 11-year-old daughter. Was very embarrassed when I was trying it out in your road and wheeling you up and down in front of all the front of
doing
all the
wheelies.
School children.
Backflips.
Yes, no, it's donated by a family member, so very, very much appreciated again. It's so nice how, you know, people are so kind.
Do you
thoughtful.
Think they're easy to use? I tried my mum's once. And it's real bugger.
Well, actually, this one that Emma's given us is really good. It turns round really well, much better than the other one in the home, which is really clunky.
They do go a bit out of control, though.
At the weekend, I took the boys up to visit my mum, just the three of us, and we took her to the pub and she had a Guinness, and the boys were playing Lou and Andy from Little Britain with the wheelchair
drink driving.
So everybody was wheeling Gulliver up to the crisps and going, now which ones do you want? Well, that one, are you sure you want that one?
Because master stripes on it in double exhaust.
Yeah, and it goes.
Now if you want a shout out, you know what to do.
Shout out.
You can contact us via our Facebook page.
PMK on Facebook.
You can contact us by tweeting.
PMK on Twitter.
You can contact us by PhilMarriott.net.
PhilMarriott.net.
I just included that because I wanted a bit of tune, because you're sounding a bit lethargic with your jingles there. Oh. Episode 19 of the PMKE podcast. Don't forget, by the way, with Max Ellis being here as part of the podcast team, the PMK people, you can check out his pictures at maxphotographic.com.
That you can.
On there of all the stags that he's been to go and shoot.
Stags.
And, well, shoot as in photography shoot, not shoot as in killing shooting.
No, I leave that to other people.
Yeah. You were just telling me that they are controlled.
Well, they control their numbers. I mean, they do it in all the royal parks because of the fact that they are obviously limited space and they do run out of room for the stags.
So you have to go and take pictures of them while you can.
Yeah, well, they don't kill them all off. I think they kill off, sadly, they kill off the more friendly stags because they're kind of, they don't really want them coming close to people. So.
I can imagine you making friends with these stags.
Yeah, well, you know me.
You feel like you've made friends with them.
Some of them, yeah, but then I don't really think that would stop them from goring me to death.
No. They're not that nice.
Like in my mind, they're my friends until I'm staring down their antlers and then realise that, you know, I'm not lunch, but certainly in the way of another male.
Yeah. But your website is maxphotographic.com. There's loads of pictures of the stags on there.
Yes.
As well as pictures of guys in gyms with their big bulging veins.
I was doing this ad job at the moment. I was trying to explain what I do to some of the people there. And I said, well, I basically photograph squirrels, stags and men's stomachs.
Yeah.
It's like my you know,
and musicians,
of choice.
Bands
and musicians
as well. You
yeah, well,
do a
everything
lot of rock
really.
Photo.
Just currently, you know, currently loads of stomachs. Did stomachs all day yesterday. That's me.
So you're here to also talk about the music that you're tormenting the diva with tour. Well, not on tour, but when you're taking the diva to a gig.
Yeah, or anywhere, playing, really. Even Sainsbury's.
You did say on the last episode that you try not to play music when the diva is in the house, at home, because you know that she's bristling and she's...
And she'll put her stuff on as well. If I put mine on, she'll insist on a turn. I'll have to listen to her record.
Yeah. So do you do it when she's out of the house? Or
when she's out.
You have your own little private party.
Yeah. The kids have to suffer it, of course.
I love it. But now you can enjoy it for the next few minutes. You can enjoy your own song on the podcast, Turned Up Loud.
One song, lucky.
I know you are very fortunate, aren't
you? I
think
I ought to have more than one song. Can I have a whole album? This is my favourite band.
Do you want an honest answer?
No, you bought me that. We bought these, not this album, but you bought me an album.
I did. It was Record Store Day, wasn't it? We both went, but to different
stores.
Yeah,
both bought the same one.
Yeah, we did. And it was a Pitch Disc, or was it?
Just coloured vinyl. Coloured vinyl. Release of an old album.
I'd never heard of them before, but I know they're an established punk band.
They're not at all punk, actually.
Are they not punk?
Not at all.
Psychobilly?
None of that.
Oh, rock.
Yeah, they're rock.
Oh.
They're sort of stonerish. I mean, they've come up from a more... They're quite edgy when they first started.
Would that be an insult to call them punk?
Yeah. It would be completely incorrect.
Would it?
Yeah.
I just know nothing.
No,
I'm rubbish.
Punk. They're more bluesy. They're quite bluesy.
Right.
But they've come up from... They were very edgy sort of rock. Sort of... I don't know what kind of rock they were, really.
Do they have like the big psychobilly, rockabilly quiffs?
No, none of that.
No.
They don't dress up at all.
No.
They're really like four blokes in T-shirts and jeans with crap hair.
Right.
Really. They're very unimpressive to look at. The lead singer's got a bit of a mad beard, but apart from that...
Beards are good.
They're all beards.
They're going up in my estimations already.
Yeah, they're big guys with beards rather than...
Definitely going up in my estimations. Wait till I hear them. I might change my mind.
Well, they sound like big guys, but they do sound like big guys with beards. And they sort of... I mean, last week we had Scissor Fight, which is a kind of southern, kind of heavy band. I mean, I say Clutch are a bit more kind of left of, the far.
Did you say they were American?
Yeah.
So whereabouts, do you know where they're from? Or?
I can't remember.
Okay.
I think there's, it's south somewhere. Can't remember where. I should know. My favourite band, I don't even know where they came from. They're American.
Yeah, but you like the sound of them. That's all that matters.
Well, I've got all their albums, really. I've bought everything.
And to be honest, if they don't look that great, you're probably not interested in finding out more about them anyway, are you?
Not really.
From a photographer's perspective.
No, it's slightly disappointing when a band... I mean, I don't like a band that looks like it dresses up. I don't like that. I like a band to look like they're comfortable in their clothes.
Genuine.
But these are a bit too comfortable in their clothes. They look like, you know, if they turn up to your house, you'd be thinking... Really going to wear that horrible t-shirt and those ill-fitting jeans?
Yeah.
And your hair, really? You know, you come to dinner looking like that?
Sounds a bit like me, actually, especially with a beard. Yeah. Ill-fitting jeans, t-shirt, bit scruffy, dodgy hair and beard. No, yeah, that's
really
me.
They aren't lookers. Not at all. I might even Google them while we're sitting here so I can show you a picture of them. But I bought their first album when I was in LA with same with Jonathan Ross. This little
you're name thing. Dropping again, Max Ellis.
He likes my chance to talk about myself and my stories.
No, I do. I
mentioned him last time, but this is a different time with with Vic Reeves actually as well, because he was there. Another story involved here.
clang of the name drop again.
We went out just shopping and bought loads of records, and I bought this and the Cypress Hill album. It was about 98 or so.
You, I won't do what you tell me.
No, that's not them.
No, that's not that. That's Rage Against the Machine. Yeah. Cypress Hill. They're around about the same time, weren't they?
Yeah, it's been a more, rap-y.
More hip-hop, though.
Yeah, much more hip-hop, rap sort of thing. But yeah, but this one, and I sort of wasn't absolutely sure. I bought it, I quite liked it, but then just sort of rediscovered it a few years later and then just thought, wow, this is brilliant. And then sort of filled in all the gaps between then and there, and that was about sort of 5-6 years ago. But now they're, you know, they're just wonderful, really. You know, a solid band. Workmanlike rock.
We like solid, yes. What's the song?
It's Cypress Grove off their, I don't know which fucking... I'm completely lost it now.
It's off an album.
It's off an album. One of their albums. I've got that.
That's all you need to know.
Oh, it's called Blast Tyrant. That's right. I called it from somewhere in the past. But I love this. Really good. Jolly song. Good video.
Suggestion again.
Turn it up. Let's watch the video.
Yeah.
The video's really funny.
But not yet.
Afterwards.
Listen to the podcast first.
Do it both at the same time.
Simultaneously.
Yes, rock it.
Episode 19 of the PMK podcast. Phil Marriott, Catherine Ellis, Max Ellis, and Stuart Eldridge.
Yes, drum I'm roll. Here. I finished brushing my hair and I've come from the toilet.
You have a very healthy platter of food there for your
I
lunch.
Do, yes, it's
which
very nice.
I feel rude actually kind of disturbing you as you're crunching on carrot
it's
and
right,
radishes.
Phil. It's work on the go, isn't it?
You never stop.
Never stop. I am. I'm multitasking.
Now, for the people that don't know who you are, and I'm sure many do, if not everybody, maybe nearly everybody who's listening, you are the long-suffering PA and manager of the diva, Catherine Ellis.
Yes.
You've been everywhere with her. You've been on tour. You've been sorting out of paperwork. You've been sorting out her gigs.
Yes, and lots of driving. Yeah. Lots of stories.
Is it more driving than action? Because I would imagine when you're, especially when you're going international.
Yeah.
It's a, I mean, it's a lot of.
I think a lot of people, they kind of see the end product because they see us there. Thanks, Max, grinning. yes, there is a lot of traveling involved, whether that's by car or by plane or. I don't think we've been on a coach. Have we been on a coach? No.
Because a lot of people
hate
that.
Oh, on a ship. We went on a ship
yeah.
as well.
Cruising.
Yeah, we did cruise.
Cruising for a bruising. Because a lot of people moan about that. A lot of people that work in the industry, that oh, the pain of packing your bags and the hassle of getting to and fro. But I know that you have a laugh when you're out and about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is tiring. I'm not going to say a lie and say yeah. it's not. It is very tiring.
But people forget that, don't they? They forget yeah. the effort that goes into yeah. travelling around.
But, yes.
Do you remember when we were in Miami? When we were in Miami together at WMC, and I'd got all ready to go, and I sat down to put my boots on, and my zip split all the way down on my dress.
Oh my god! I completely
a wardrobe malfunction.
Yeah. Oops.
Thank god it happened just before I left, and not. When I'd left the building.
Think about it. It could have been worse. It could have been the Janet Jackson could have flashed a tit.
Yes, I think it took a little while. Get the maps out.
with a star strategically yeah. placed over the end.
I think we got it sorted, though, very quickly.
Well, I just changed.
You did.
Yeah, luckily you had your wardrobe with you.
She did. But we that actually was a particularly great event to go to, and I think we have talked about some of the things that we did before,
yeah,
but there was one thing I don't think we have talked about, and I hold quite fondly because I'd never heard this person DJ before, but we actually got to hear Frankie Knuckles DJ at David Morales' pool party, and we'd met Hector Ramiro,
yeah,
a DJ producer from New York, the night before. And he was looking after the kind of backstage area, and we kind of went in. And it was actually quite an incredible atmosphere. You know, people dancing, just kind of everywhere.
Loving.
What you Loving see on Frankie television Knuckles. About, yeah. you know, people who are doing dancing at pool parties.
Yeah.
But along to great music.
Do you know what? In hindsight as well, particularly now because it's more poignant, I think, you know, there are people that would love to have had that opportunity to have yeah. seen him play, or yeah. at least even just been in the same room as him.
Yeah.
And I mean, think if you've had that experience, I think you're quite lucky.
Well, it's an experience I don't think I will ever forget, just because it, you know, when there's something about dancing outside in the sun for one.
Oh, do you know, it's a dream of mine to DJ. Well, I've done it once in Sidges, but I'd love to play on a beach. Somewhere, and it's the typical,
yeah.
you know, dream situation. Really,
of course,
as a DJ,
and you
it?
Know, it was you're sort of wrapped up in that whole kind of, you know, the environment, and there was loads of people there who were. It was all kind
loving
of very
life,
social, yeah.
Loving the sun, loving the tunes,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That's what music's all about,
absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely. So yeah, so that's a very. I have a very fond memory of going out to WMC. Need to do it again.
Hashtag well gel.
Yeah. Hashtag need to do it again.
Now get out.
Well, Phil, next time we go, we should go with you, maybe.
Yes, please.
We could do a podcast on the road. Podcast on
do you
the
know,
road.
That's a brilliant idea. Why yeah. don't we do that? PMK on the road.
Yeah,
yeah.
Go, absolutely.
Yeah, brilliant.
Road trip. And then you wouldn't need to worry about guests because there would be plenty of guests
we
walking by.
We wouldn't need guests. We are important enough. Think of the fun we could have, though.
You would have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Have a lot of fun. I remember experience. Actually one of the hotel that we were actually staying in, Todd Terry was staying in.
Amazing.
And we were checking out and he was literally standing right next to me. I was like, I'm sure I recognise you.
Wow.
Excuse me, are you Todd Terry? And yeah. he was like, yes.
Well, of it.
So it is a bit like that.
So every episode, Stewie, you tell us about a song that Catherine has either produced or co-written or done the top line for, or all of the above,
yeah,
and sung on.
And some.
This one, I have to say, not wanting to steal your thunder, but this one is just huge, even yes, more so than some of yes, the other huge ones.
It's huge now.
Mm.
I do remember when Catherine first told me about this. It's the Gravity soundtrack.
Yeah, I couldn't quite believe it when.
Well, Catherine had been for a session to do the track and had said that, you know, this is what she'd done, and it was for a film, and that it was with George Clooney. And
yeah, not just
but
any
it,
other
I was
film.
Like, aren't you more excited about
George
it?
Clooney's
yeah,
in it?
And there's like me jumping up and down like a right girl because it's like, oh my god, it's a film. And Catherine is very relaxed about it
because so much of what one does never comes to fruition, is never heard. And having been in the business for a very long time, I do enjoy everything I do, but I don't expect anything anymore. Not
best
to sound
way to
cynical.
Be. Yeah, no,
not,
it's best
I'm
way
depressed
to be.
Or I don't. I mean, yeah. I do expect things to go well, but I just, you just don't know what's going to happen with something.
Don't you think though? That
I was the
that
third
attitude,
vocalist that he tried, yeah, and he hadn't been happy with the last two. So you don't know. Do
but
you?
Don't you think that the outcome of that is if you have that attitude, the highs that you get when you know that it's coming to fruition are even bigger than. Yeah.
Well, I think that was what was the exciting thing, because when it actually did kind of blow up, and then Catherine was like all over
Boy, did
British
it blow.
Television,
yeah,
on the news.
Being interviewed by ITN.
Yeah, I mean, it was just quite incredible. It was just, again, one of those incredible times. A bit like, you know, when we talked about When You Touch Me.
Yeah.
It was that, it just, you're wrapped up in the whole kind of experience.
I went to see the movie, which actually I loved as well, aside from the fact that Catherine sung on the end credits. Well, yes, it was before the credits, wasn't it? It's
yes,
the final scene.
Yes, it is.
And I actually cried because it moved me so much. the story of the film, what happened at the end, and the vocal, which I think, and I'm not just saying this because Catherine's in the room, but the vocal,
you
I
are,
think,
Phil.
It was a perfect match.
It
for
was.
That movie. I think it was the best score.
And I know what you mean. Lee and I actually watched it at home. We didn't see it at the cinema.
Gives me goosebumps.
But we had it on really loud, and we actually weren't necessarily ready for it because we didn't know where it was going to come in the film. And when it does hit, it does. It's quite emotional.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And it is a really powerful. I mean, it's
very emotive.
Is it fair to say that it was probably the most difficult job that you've had as a vocalist, because it was a belting note at the end, wasn't it? It was a high.
I mean, I really had to dig very deep to get that note at the end, and I didn't know going into the session whether I would get the note. And I said to him when I arrived, I don't know if I can hit that note at the end. And he, Stephen B. Price, said, I don't know if anybody can. I might have shot myself in the foot there. Don't worry, we'll change it if you can't do it when we get to it. But I triumphed.
You did.
But I remember you saying that it was actually one of the most difficult sessions that she'd done.
Yeah.
And that she did really have to dig very deep. And, you know, for that, you know, it's very commendable, Miss Ellis.
I love the way it builds as well, because it's a very slow burning track. And then at the end, it builds that big crescendo, the big climax that you get at the end.
No, absolutely. And that's, I guess, why so many TV shows since then actually use it.
Yeah.
You know, Britain's Got Talent and things like that.
Can you tell us?
Spitfire stuff.
Can you tell us about was it the Oscars or the BAFTAs? I can't remember. I'm sure it was in America, wasn't it? Where George actually collected his award, and they were playing that music as he collected.
It is quite incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oprah Winfrey said, "And the winner of best soundtrack is Gravity." And then they played the bit with me singing.
Yeah.
Hand across all the, you know, Johnny.
How does
Depp.
It feel? How does it feel to have that moment?
Really exciting. Yeah. On my own in my glasses and pyjamas.
With a bottle of wine. Yeah. Yeah.
Quietly triumphant.
Yes. So the bumps have well and truly been goosed.
What bumps?
I had goosebumps listening to that song that you did the vocals for. Can you do that? Can you reenact that vocal on Gravity? Stewie, did you notice how I'd grabbed the volume control on the recording and turned it down with such...
I don't know.
Ferocity. What's the word?
Ferocity. Do you want me to talk about my classic cut now?
I would love you to talk about your classic
cut.
Okay,
I decided to choose another old song, as the last one was quite an old song as well. So this is by Peggy Lee, who is one of my favourite singers. She's just got a voice like velvet. She was born in 1920 And she actually died in 2002, age 81. And the song that I've chosen is called Black Coffee. And I actually also own this album on vinyl. It was released in 1956. And it was recorded between 1953 and 1956. And it's just such a brilliantly written song. I don't actually have the composer here in front of me, but it's one of those lovely songs that tells a whole story, and it's just about this woman waiting for her lover to come home, and you get the feeling that he probably stays out quite a bit and he's probably up to no good. And it's just how she's drinking black coffee and walking the floor and can't sleep, and it's just a brilliantly sad bluesy song.
Is that a metaphor for her to sober up and wise up to what's going on in his life, perhaps, that he's a bit of a rotter?
No, in this song she's a bit of a victim, and she seems to just sort of be accepting it, which is all not, of course, what we would say nowadays.
Yeah.
But this was 1953.
She was being very polite.
So she was,
in her 50s way.
Yeah, not so much polite, but I just think it's very atmospheric anyway, the song. And the production on this version, because lots of people have covered it.
So we're coming to the end of episode 19 of the PMKE podcast.
No, 19.
Poor Hardcastle moment there. All very 80s. I love it. So thank you very much for listening.
That's all right, Phil.
Back
always
in a couple of weeks.
Don't mind, you've got quite a pleasant voice, really.
Thank you.
I've
got a face for radio. People keep
telling
me.
It's very kind of you, Stu, to make an appearance.
Yeah.
I think he's redeemed himself, but just in time.
Yeah. I'm a bit concerned about Max's tooth. Should we perhaps go and get him to find out if it's actually all right now? Well, he was filing it earlier.
Filing his tooth down.
After. Well, he did damage it on a lunch provided by the diva.
But yeah, actually, no, I'm going to get the packaging out of the bin. If it hasn't got a warning about the stones, I shall be writing a letter.
Sue them. Sue them. Well, you can update us.
Make it so.
Update us on the next podcast and we'll find out how many millions you've made.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I do. I have written. Rich and actually, we found. I might have mentioned this before, but the kids found a pube in a in a fruit bar. How do I know it was a pube? Because it was a very thick, short hair.
And curly.
I suppose it could have been beard. Anyway, it was thicker than hair.
Don't look at me.
Anyway, I sent it off to them. I complained.
Yeah. You sent it back.
I got some free bars back and a letter saying we've analysed it and it's not a pubic hair.
How the hell do they know?
I remember I've sent you some shaving foam.
But ew, nasty.
Ew. On that note, we would love you to come back and listen again.
If you enjoy hearing about mystery photographs of naked men appearing on comment threads or... you know, pubes in food or people filing down their own teeth. Tune in. You know where to come. PMKE.